This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. This is Tim McMaster, along with Ken Rosenthal, who is here to answer all of your baseball questions. That is always what we do here on the Monday edition of the Athletic Baseball Show. For all the dads listening, hope you had a great Father's Day on Sunday. And that includes you, Ken.
Thank you, Tim. And actually, every day is a happy Father's Day for me. Got three great kids, and it's awesome to be their dad, and just an honor and a privilege, really.
Outstanding. And this is my last Father's Day not as a dad, so I'm looking forward to next year.
The fun's about to begin.
Yes. Yeah, it is. All right, let's get to the baseball. And before we get to the actual mailbag questions, we recorded this over the weekend, but as this drops on Monday is the day across Major League Baseball. The crackdown on substances, the sticky stuff as we've come to know it, is beginning. Now, since the announcement, we've had plenty of complaints already from very unhappy pitchers. Tyler Glasnow even connecting the crackdown to his elbow injury. We've also seen a drop in spin rates around the league since the league announced what was coming, Ken. And it's going to be wild to see how this all goes down now that it's official.
It is, Tim. And it's going to be really fascinating to see how this plays out, how the enforcement is conducted, and how successful it is, and how the umpires are able to distinguish between the different substances. That's a concern pretty much everyone has right now. Is this going to be something that the umpires are able to accomplish kind of easily and will become routine, or will there be bumps in the road? And I expect there will be in the early going. And determining whether a pitcher is using sticky substance or not, Trevor Bauer spoke about it on his video, his most recent one, basically saying there's no objective way of looking at it. And that's a problem for him, and it's a problem for other people as well. So the good news is that what is happening, and we can debate whether it should have happened in the middle of a season or not, but what is happening, getting the illegal crazy stuff out of the game, not the rosin or anything like that, the spider tack and all the other advanced substances. As you mentioned, we're seeing a drop in spin rates, and that is something that will help level the playing field. That's really important here. The priorities are to level the playing field, to make sure everyone stays healthy, pitchers and hitters. And ultimately, the solution here is one of two things. Attack your ball, meaning a ball that can be gripped without advanced substances, or a universal substance that can be applied to balls that will be legal and will take care of this question. If baseball had either one of these things, we wouldn't be in this position right now. I don't know why in this day and age baseball has been unable to develop a tackier ball. Pitchers have been complaining for years that it's too slick, and that's why, in a sense, this controversy, this problem erupted. Now, a number of pitchers took it too far. That's why we're in the place we're in right now.
And you mentioned the tackier baseball, which exists in other leagues around the world. Other people have been able to figure it out. If that was the decision baseball definitely makes going forward, obviously this year is what it is. They're changing the rules here, or not changing the rules, but enforcing the rules here at the midway point. But how long do you think it would take to develop a baseball like that? Is that something that could be ready to go for next season, or is that years away?
I don't know. And in the past, when they've thought about this idea, I believe 2019, they tested one of these tackier type balls in spring training. Didn't go over well. And before you introduce a ball, you do have to test it. And I imagine it would go through a testing process. And I would think that the start of next year would be ambitious. But maybe in the meantime, you get the universal substance and you just allow pitchers to use that and that's it. And if there's anything else on their body or on their fingers, their arm, that's it. You can't do that. You're out. So, again, we're getting hopefully to some of these solutions. I would imagine all this has accelerated that. In my view, it should have been addressed a while back. It should have been prioritized. It has not been. But in the meantime, we have this situation that's going to occur now with the umpires essentially in control. And listen, this is going to be like many things the umpires face, a judgment call in a lot of cases. I don't know that it's always going to be obvious. And it's a big responsibility. They always have big responsibility, but here's just another one for the umpires to deal with.
All right, it's going to be interesting, and no surprise, some of the questions in the mailbag also have to do with the substances. So let's move ahead to the mailbag.
Hey, this is Ken. I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail.
If you want to get involved for next week's show, you can get on the line with your voicemail, or you can email us. If you want to call, it's 646-543-7072. The email address is tabaseballshow@gmail.com. Whichever one you're more comfortable with to get your question into Ken. And Ken, you actually referenced Trevor Bauer's video, and one of the questions from email is about that as well. Trevor Bauer, in his YouTube video, asked the viewers if a rule that is in the books that is not being enforced as written and the players have been told as such is still a rule. I would love to hear your input on that question, and then stemming off of the sticky stuff rule into other poorly written rules. Per the MLB's website, their rulebook for a hit by pitch states that a player must attempt to get out of the way to be granted first base. Obviously, this isn't really enforced anywhere. Do you think MLB will clean up some of these rules that aren't enforced in the offseason?
I'm not sure. And it's certainly a valid question in light of this, because we've seen this rule not enforced for so many years, and now suddenly it is. So why not take the same approach with some other things like the hit by pitch situation that was mentioned? Now, I watched Bauer's video, and I actually had some conversations with people around baseball this week about whether a rule that is not enforced is actually a rule. At what point does it lapse and it's a standard custom and practice, and therefore, sorry, the rule really is not in effect anymore. What I was told is that if the union was to make that case, the players' union, it would be a tough argument to win. The rule's on the books, they've agreed to it, and regardless of whether it has been enforced properly or not, it would be, again, as was described to me, just something that would not be easy to make a good case for. So I don't know that that happens. But as for other rules and where this goes, when you have a collective bargaining negotiation, as we will have and are having right now, leading to the December 1st expiration of the current CBA, everything is in play. Now, do I expect the hit-by-pitch rule to be first and foremost among the parties' minds? No, but it is possible that some of these things will be discussed, yes.
Yeah, I feel like kind of hope that that's not at the top of their minds. There's so many big things to worry about. Let's not worry about the Mets winning a game because a player didn't get out of the way of a pitch earlier this season. All right.
That's very fair, Tim.
Another email here, and this one's a repeat emailer, and I'm going to pat myself on the back here, Ken, because Geert Jan Verhoeven from Billingstad, Norway, the beginning of this email actually said that I nailed the pronunciation of the name the first time around.
Wow.
So yes. So hopefully I did again, but I think I just said it the same exact way. Anyway, the question is, knowing that arms are more valued than bats in this part of the season before the trade deadline, how does the banning of foreign substances impact the trade value for pitchers? Do you expect clubs to stay away from certain hot candidates? Interesting to hear what the insiders are thinking about this.
That is an interesting question for sure. And it will depend on what we see in the next few weeks. Now let's take a pitcher we think might be available at the deadline who is really good. And let's say his performance drops off in the next few weeks and their performance drops off accompanied by a reduction in his spin rates. I would think at that point you're looking at a different pitcher and clubs will recognize that and not view him the same way. So certainly there is a possibility that the trade market could be affected by this. It may be affected the other way too. If you have a pitcher who is performing well and maintains his performance with no change in his spin rates, perhaps a team would have more confidence that that pitcher would continue pitching at his same level. So it's going to be really interesting to see which players and which teams have the biggest drop off or not when this enforcement starts on Monday.
I guess it's good for teams dealing with this that they do have more than a month until the deadline to kind of see how this all shakes out. So it'll be interesting.
Yes, it's actually timing right. That is fortuitous for everyone involved because we're talking about this starting on June 21st. And you're right, Tim, we've got 5 weeks left until the deadline. And that's enough of a sample size, even with the All-Star break, where you'll start to see some things. We're already seeing things. As you mentioned at the top, we have seen a drop in the average spin rate relative to velocity. It's kind of stunning, actually, what's happened. And it kind of shows you we really did have a problem here.
Yeah, and it shows you guys are paying attention and they don't want to get suspended, I guess. All right, first voicemail, also a trade deadline question. Here we go.
Hey, guys, Colin here from Denver, Colorado. No shocker here, going to talk about trade deadline stuff with the Rockies. A lot of talk about Trevor Story being traded. But I think that the few guys that are most likely to get traded from the Rockies would be C.J. Cron, John Gray, and Michael Givens. Michael Givens for the veteran bullpen role. C.J. Cron is having a decent year. He's a good veteran to have in the dugout for, you know, depth and whatnot. And then John Gray would be an awesome middle-of-the-rotation guy for a serious contender. Thanks. Love the show, guys. Bye.
Colin, you sound like the Rockies GM, Bill Schmidt, trying to sell your club to other people, sell your players to other people. Hey, man, our guys are really good. Well, Trevor Story is really good. We know that. Michael Givens, you look at the ERA this year, and going into Sunday, when we taped this, it was just 2.78. Very good. But his FIP, which is stripping away some of the other factors and giving you a more perhaps accurate reflection of his performance, was 4.98. And that correlates with the ERA in terms of how it's measured. So with his high walk rate, 4 home runs and 22 2/3 innings, he is an okay reliever. He's a good reliever maybe at best, but I don't know that he's going to bring you much. John Gray is interesting. The Rockies view their rotation as actually a strength of the club. And at times it has been this year with Gomber and Marquez and Gray. But at the same time, John Gray's on the IL right now. He's got a right flexor strain. So unless he comes off and pitches well leading into the deadline, he is not going to be someone that really can be peddled. And I'm not sure he would bring much anyway when you have a question about his flexor. It's simple as that. Cron having a good year, 800-plus OPS, and someone who is kind of a quality, solid player. But a first baseman, it would have to be the right fit. Maybe the Red Sox would see him as someone they'd like. I just don't know, like Givens, exactly what he'd bring back. But all of the players that you mentioned are trade candidates. It's just a question of how much in demand they are.
Yeah, and if it becomes worth it for what you're getting, for sure. It'll be interesting to see. The Rockies definitely one of the big sellers, at least they will attempt to be. All right, back to email. Ken, Kyle Wilson says, with the injury of Tyler Glasnow, the rotation seems to suddenly be in a more precarious position in Tampa Bay. Do you think that with the abundance of depth in the organization and an apparent need for a true ace, that the Rays might be more willing to explore the pitchers on the trade market, or do you think that they will look at answers internally? I understand that this comes with an enormous caveat that the Rays exist in a perpetual state of unpredictability and that confidently predicting their moves is close to impossible. I love perpetual state of unpredictability.
Kyle, that's good. You should be maybe writing for The Athletic. But the question, I'll answer it in two different parts. First, you asked about internal solutions. Michael Wacha got the first crack on Friday night, did not fare well versus Seattle. So you might say, okay, does that increase their need for a starter? I'm not sure. They've got Patino. They've got Colin McHugh, who they could move into the rotation, stretch him out, or in their case, use him as a bulk guy, or more of a bulk guy. Chris Archer could come back too. So they do have some different things that they could do internally. And then externally, as Mike Petriello of MLB.com wrote this week, there aren't a lot of great options, honestly. The list of pitchers on the injured list right now is sort of astonishing. These guys are all on the injured list and all with arm issues. John Gray, we mentioned him. John Means from Baltimore. Michael Pineda from Minnesota. Danny Duffy, Kansas City. Madison Bumgarner and Matthew Boyd. All on the injured list. The healthy pitchers, well, for the most part, there aren't many that are pitching that well. Two intriguing names. Actually, I'll give you three intriguing names. I don't think the Rockies will trade Herman Marquez, so let's start there. He's not one of the three. Kikuchi from Seattle. He has pitched well this year, and I don't know how Seattle is going to view this. He's got a bit of a different kind of contract. They're not really in a position right now where they want to trade Kikuchi for A-ball prospects. They want to contend soon. I think next year's the year they need to show some progress. So it would depend on the nature of the deal, but he's an interesting guy. Now, this is another guy. I'm going to go up the ladder in terms of increased availability. Jose Berríos, Minnesota. Do I think he'll be traded? No, I don't think the Twins will get what they want for him, which will be a lot. But in this market, he is certainly one of the better pitchers that will be available. And finally, Kyle Gibson. Since opening day, he had a brutal start. Since then, 1.51 ERA in 12 starts. He's with the Rangers. He's going to get moved. He might be the best starting pitcher available at the deadline. And again, that's not really a great list. A list that Tampa Bay would look at and say, wow, we've got to get one of these guys because he's better than what we have. Might not be better than what they have. And for anyone listening out there, you're saying, Ken, what about Max Scherzer? Yes, Max Scherzer possibly could be available. Nationals had a better week this week, so they're still going to hang in there. This is not a team that has ever really chosen to go the full rebuild route, and I don't expect that they will. But it is possible Scherzer will be out there. I just can't see Tampa Bay taking on the salary that they would need to take on here.
Yeah, and in any of those trades, you also think about Tampa Bay actually trading prospects away. It just seems so unlikely. They have Shane Baz as well in the minor league system, another good pitcher. I just can't see it either, but we'll certainly see. You got to consider the window and where it is as far as the organization. All right.
And one more thing here, Tim, as well. One more thing on Tampa Bay. Remember, yes, they have prospects, but they generally aim high in what they want trade-wise. And when I say that, they will hunt for elite talent. But where is the elite talent? That is the question. And I don't know that they're going to ultimately see what is out there, even a Kyle Gibson, as necessary to what they're doing when they've got McClanahan and all these other cats who they can use. Shane Baz, I forgot to mention him. I'm glad you did. You could conceivably factor in. They are just loaded, and they're going to be careful with how they proceed.
All right, the next question is from voicemail.
Ken, this is Derek from NYY Recaps. Just want to say I love the show. By the way, would the Yankees ever consider making a change at the general manager position? You talked about Aaron Boone possibly being on the hot seat. I want to know if Brian Cashman is on the hot seat.
Well, Derek, if we were having a phone conversation, first of all, I'd ask, what is NYY Recaps? I assume that's some kind of Yankees website. So glad to hear from a fellow media member. Now, the question is, all right, how much of this do you put on Cashman? Actually, as I wrote last week, it's an organization-wide failure, and he deserves his share of responsibility. There's no question about that. I believe he would tell you that. The team, the roster construction, is not where you would want it to be. For whatever reason, it's just not athletic enough. It's too right-handed. We can go through all the issues that we've gone through in recent weeks talking about them. But the question of not having a good year and building a subpar team versus should a general manager be fired? Well, we're talking about two different things. Now, a lot of Yankee fans are really down on Brian Cashman. They haven't won a World Series since 2009. But during his tenure, 23 years, they have not had a losing season. That is kind of astonishing. So let's start there, the bigger picture. He's been a good general manager. He's widely respected by others in the game. He's thought of as one of the better minds. So then you ask, okay, let's say, for instance, the Yankees want to consider firing Brian Cashman. Who's the next guy? Who do you bring in that's going to be better? You might say, Cashman, he's too analytics heavy. Well, you can make that case, but guess what? Pretty much every other GM is too. You're not going to find, I don't know, Brian Sabian or Jim Hendry. You could find those guys, but I don't know that you're going to hire them as GM in this version of the game that we're dealing with now. Whether that is right or wrong, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about who would replace Brian Cashman, and I don't know that you're going to get better. Do I believe Cashman needs to do some things differently and kind of address some of their issues? Absolutely. And I don't believe he's done his best work here. But at the same time, when you talk about firing someone, You got to tell me who you're going to get that is going to be better. And I don't see a clear answer there.
All right, we're going to stay in New York for the next voicemail.
Jeremy here from Queens, New York. So I wanted to get into the NL Cy Young race. With all the talk about DeGrom and even Burns and Woodruff, I want to know where you would rank Zach Wheeler among the finalists. I think he's one of the rare pitchers that will go 200 innings this year. Not only are Wheeler's, you know, surface level numbers fantastic, the Statcast metrics, all of it, he's just had a really good year. I just want to know where you think you would rank him.
Jeremy, I'd put him pretty high. And depending on what happens the rest of the year, he might be in the final three and he could even win this thing. Right now, he leads the National League in innings. He's at 96 and a third. And this is going into, again, going into Sunday. So he has pitched almost 30 more innings already than Jacob DeGrom. Now, is Jacob DeGrom the best pitcher? Yes. But if Jacob DeGrom has continued injury issues or has to miss time, it's going to alter the equation. Now, I'm a believer in bulk being an important factor in a Cy Young race. A couple of years ago, when Blake Snell won with 180 and two-thirds innings over Justin Verlander, who had thrown almost 35 more innings, I had a problem with that. I voted for Verlander. So if the innings gap between DeGrom and whoever is really wide, well, I'm going to have to be convinced that DeGrom would need to win the award under those circumstances. Again, he's the best. We're not disputing that. But there does have to be a certain amount of workload involved in this equation. Wheeler has been great all year. There's no doubt about that. Along with Gausman and Trevor Rogers and Woodruff and Burns, as you mentioned, these guys have been at the best level of performance pretty much all season long. Let's just see how it plays out. I know right now it looks pretty clear cut, but we've got a lot of season to go.
Long way to go for sure. All right, we have a couple questions here that are a little different, Ken, which is refreshing. They're not about what's going on right now in the game. They're more conversation starters. Let's start with Thomas.
Hello, Ken and Tim. This is Thomas from Toronto. I really have a question about the current events in baseball. Instead, I have more of a question that might just make you think. And this may be a question more geared toward the innovative Jason Stark, but I am going to ask you, what do you think is one award that should be handed out every year in Major League Baseball?
Thomas, I love the question, and you're absolutely right. This is a good question for Jason, and I believe Jason has tackled this in the past, or at least one of the two things I'm going to mention. As for an award, I would like to see a super utility award. Something that would go to the player who demonstrates versatility and proficiency at a number of different positions and contributes to his team in ways that won't win him a silver slugger or gold glove because he's not at one position, but may clearly show that, hey, this guy does a lot for his club. So I'd be in favor of that kind of award. Maybe Kike Hernandez would have won, maybe Ben Zobrist in his glory. Hey, Chris Bryant could win it this year if you had it. But the other thing I wanted to mention, and I can't recall if Jason has mentioned this lately, but I know he's been on this before, perhaps an honorary All-Star. And an honorary All-Star would be this year someone like Albert Pujols. Albert Pujols is performing pretty well for the Dodgers, but I wouldn't say at an All-Star level. But yet, it would be cool to see him at the game. Would he be on the roster? No, he doesn't have to be on the roster. But it seems that every year, there are players who are kind of maybe fading or at the end of their careers or for whatever reason not going to be honored as All-Stars and yet could be at the game representing the sport in that fashion. And I would like to see that happen. And I don't know that it ever will. The roster's already big enough. But again, I'm not talking about putting the person on the roster. I'm just talking about having him come out, say, in the seventh inning, wave, get his applause that he deserves, and have him honored in that respect.
You think about the times when we've kind of had that opportunity, right, when guys did get there. I think Jeter, right, in his last year was an All-Star. David Ortiz. There's been times. It's always so special when you get those guys, when you know they're on their way out and they get that one last All-Star appearance. All right, one last question. One more voicemail. It is from Frank.
Hi, Ken. My name is Frank. In honor of the Stanley Cup Finals quickly approaching, This is my all-time favorite stat in any sport. Wayne Gretzky could have gone his entire career without scoring a single goal, still have finished number one in total points. What is your favorite baseball statistic career number?
I don't have one that good. That's an incredible number. My favorite stat, it's not really a stat, it's a record. And it's the Ripken record, 2,632 consecutive games played. And the reason why I like it is because it's never going to be broken. And I feel really confident in saying that. Not only will it not be broken, no one will even try to break it because it's so crazy and it's so out there and times have changed so much. Workload management, load management, whatever you call it, that it's just not going to be something that you'll ever see again. And you can talk about other milestones in baseball, Cy Young's wins record and all that, that won't be matched too. But this is something that will not only stand the test of time, it will, in my opinion, grow even more impressive and incredulous over time. So that's mine. If you had Jason on this podcast and he was with me right now, he could give you 10 to 15 better answers than I just gave you. But that's the one I've got.
All right, good stuff. Great questions. As always, we like the questions that are also away from what's going on in baseball right now, like those last couple that make you think and bring up some cool topics. If you want to get involved in the show next week, you can call us again. The number 646-543-7072. Our email, tabaseballshow@gmail.com. Ken, where are you off to next week? You got rained out this week in St. Louis.
I did. I'll be in L.A. next week for a good one. Cubs, Dodgers.
Probably won't get rained out in L.A.
No, I won't get rained out in Cubs, Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. And I will tell you a funny story, Tim, before we go. And this just demonstrates the perils of live television. So last night, I'm doing a game for MLB Network. And I stand or sit in the photo pit, which is on the far side of the dugout. That's usually my position for most games. And it's interesting, in Atlanta now, they have plexiglass between that area and the dugout, so you can stand behind the plexiglass and really be protected from foul balls. Now, I suffered a broken finger 1 year when I got hit. I also got hit in the head at Fenway a few years ago, and blood was coming out pretty good, but I was fine. So last night, I turned my back to the field to go on camera, because our camera was right there. Positions always vary where the cameras are. But I had to turn my back in this case, and I was just a touch exposed to a foul ball potentially coming my way. Well, sure enough, we're about to go on. Matt Viscursion's about to come to me, and a screaming foul ball comes my way on the ground, but it's coming in really hot. And often down there, the balls hook. So even if you think you're protected, you're not necessarily protected. So anyway, ball almost hits me. I like duck my hips out of the way. And seconds later, literally seconds later, Matt's like, "And Ken, what about Tyler O'Neill?" And I was basically too flabbergasted to even talk. I did talk. It came out relatively okay, but I was sort of shaking in that moment. So let me just tell you, people, live TV is not always that easy.
Seriously, and I can relate, Ken, certainly my time working at MLB.com and traveling for the playoffs, doing the pregame shows that were streamed down either baseline. And I don't know if people realize how stressful it is. And I would always joke to the cameraman, "Hey, if I see your eyes light up, I'm ducking." Like that's going to be the symbol to me, is like, if you if you have that shock that something's on its way, I am ducking out of the way. But it is a little bit stressful. A lot of times you get kind of the screen in the way. But like you said, they can be hooked around that screen and those balls are zipping.
They are. And the 1 year I got hit and broke my finger, I did stay in the game, by the way. Blood was everywhere. Happened like in the fourth inning. But that year, I will admit, I was looking down at my phone when the ball came and I wasn't looking at the field. And it was somewhat my responsibility. I thought I was protected, but I wasn't. The ball hooked. And I even remember what story I was working on. It was the Mets picking up Terry Collins' option. It was the end of the season. Was Terry Collins' option worth breaking my finger over? I would say probably not. But hey, no. That's what we do.
Yeah, if it was a trade deadline deal, maybe, but probably not the managerial extension. All right, that's going to do it for this Monday edition of the Athletic Baseball Show. But stick with us all week long. Coming up on Starkville on Tuesday, it's going to be a fun one. James Holzhauer, you know him from Jeopardy fame, of course, one of the all-time greats on Jeopardy. He has actually become a contributor here at The Athletic, and he's going to join Jason and Doug. There will be lots of fun trivia. James, also beyond his gambling prowess and his ability at trivia in general, he's also a huge baseball fan. So that's going to be a fun conversation. Then on Thursday, it is Hunter Pence and Grant Brisby. On Friday, Derek Van Riper and Keith Law. The MLB draft is coming up quickly, so definitely tune into DVR and Keith every week as well. If you want to join The Athletic, you can do that right now. Just $3.99 per month for a subscription. Go to theathletic.com/baseball show for that. Ken, have a great week.
You too, Tim. Thank you.
All right. Have a great week to everyone else out there.